Have you ever thought about joining a speaking association? In the States, it's the National Speaking Association. Here in the UK, it's the Professional Speaking Association. Well, I've got the president, yes, the president of the Professional Speaking Association talking about the benefits of joining a speaking association and sharing some great tips as well. Welcome, everybody. This is Trevor Lee. This is the Better Presentations, More Sales podcast. We're at episode number 302. And I've got Chantel Cornelius, who is the president of, here in the UK, of the Professional Speaking Association, the PSA. And Chantel's going to talk about the benefits of joining that, how she got involved with it, and the great things that you can do. And it doesn't mean you have to be a keynote speaker to be a member of the Professional Speaking Association. And Chantel is also going to share with you some great tips on how to emotionally connect with your audience, because it's so, so important, isn't it? That kind of thing. Now, before we meet Chantel and hear all that great stuff, just a little reminder that I've got this online presentation course. It's now live, okay? So sometimes you don't want to be in a room with other people, do you? You know, learning presentation skills. You don't want to necessarily do live one-to-ones. You just want to do something you can learn at your own pace. So Transform Your Business Presentations is now available as an online course. I'll put a link in the show notes and I'll put a code in the show notes, which if you're one of the first 25 people to sign up, you will get 50% off. So that brings it down below £100. You've got videos, you've got audio, you've got checklists, you've got goodness knows what in there as well. So if you'd like to do that, and I might even, if you leave a review and you mention you're doing the course, I'll even send you, if you let me know where you live, a copy of my book, 7 Steps to Successful Presentations, which the course is kind of built around as well. So that's all good stuff. And if you like this podcast, then please do leave a review. That would be amazing. You get a chance to rate it. If you're not sure how to do that and you're listening to it on your phone, then find the show on your phone, scroll down. When you listen, you're on this episode, but go back to the show page on your phone, scroll down, you'll see some of the latest episodes. And then just below that, you'll get a chance to press the rate and review button, because that would be fantastic. Right, I think it's time we get over and meet the president of the Professional Speaking Association here in the UK, Chantel Cornelius. So, Chantel, it's great to have you on the podcast. Would you like to tell the listeners a little bit about yourself, your speaking journey? And now you're the president of the Professional Speaking Association. Wow, how about that?
I know. How did that happen? Thank you, Trevor. Thank you for having me. It's great to be with you today. How did I get here? That's a really good question. I was thinking about this the other day, and I've realized that while I've been in business running my marketing company, Apple Tree Marketing, for nearly 24 years. And I've been using speaking to promote the business and then more recently being paid to speak for quite a long time. But I think I actually first did professional paid public speaking about 30 years ago when I was a riding instructor.
Oh, okay.
which wasn't planned. I came out of university and didn't really know what to do with myself. So I spent 3 years mucking around with horses. They're still a passion, but I went and worked at various riding schools and I learned how to teach riding. And you're basically standing in the middle of an arena, instructing, projecting your voice, because you can't shout at them, especially the kids, you know, and I would have adults and kids and all sorts trotting circles around me. And they look to the person in the middle. They see you as the expert. And there were times early on when I was really new to training and learning how to teach people to ride. I knew how to ride, but teaching is something different. And I realized that people would look at me going, well, you're obviously the expert because I'm paying you to teach me. that was quite interesting. And yeah, more recently, I've started doing it more properly and more professionally on a stage in front of audiences and rooms full of people rather than people on horses. So it's a bit different, but that's I think that's where it all started.
Well, that's really interesting that, isn't it? Because I find that a lot of people, you know, start in that way without even realizing it, you know, because you think back to when you were stood in the middle of that arena, you know, as you say, projecting your voice rather than shouting. And I imagine that's stood you in quite good stead since, hasn't it? That experience from those days in terms of that projection.
Yeah, I think it has. And like I said, it's only fairly recently that I've realised that that's where it came from. And back then, we were taught how to deliver lessons, how to plan and structure lessons, which is a bit like planning and structuring a speech or a workshop. But I wasn't taught anything there about body language or how to use my voice. I suspect if you learn to teach people to ride now, you will get all of that. So for me, part of my speaking journey, that the bit that needed the most help was learning how to speak properly, how to get my voice heard, how to enunciate without shouting, because didn't get any training with that. So that was the bit I had to learn.
Well, it's really interesting how you go back in time, because I always say that, and this is more than 30 years ago, by the way, that I was, when I was a youngster, I was a member of the local Young Farmers Club, because I was brought up in rural Lincolnshire. And I thought by joining the Young Farmers Club, I would learn how to drive a tractor better, which would get me a good summer job. But I actually learned how to be confident as a speaker. And I never expected that, because there were lots of public speaking competitions, which I had no idea had happened. And I got involved in those, and I was a quiet little kid, 15, timid kid. And I always say the Young Farmers were part of my journey, a big part. So you never know. Yeah. So the Professional Speaking Association, how did you get involved in that?
Well, firstly, of course, here's the mug. I have the official PSA mug with me.
We've got to show that as the video clip for the mug.
Drinking my tea. How did I get involved? I first became a member in 2014. I had a client who I was mentoring through his marketing, and he was a member. And he said to me one day, "You really need to up your game in speaking. You must come to a PSA event." Okay, I do what I'm told. So I went along to one of the regional events. I live near Reading in Berkshire, and the Thames Valley region meets there on a monthly basis. And I went along with my client. And initially, I was a bit rabbit in headlights. There were some what I thought were great speakers there. And I thought, I'm not sure this is for me. But my client said, no, keep coming. And so I did, and I soon realized that actually I was able to learn a lot more about my speaking. The PSA is all about speaking more and speaking better. So the speaking more is improving your sales and marketing, for example, in terms of growing your speaking business. And then speak better is about exactly that. It's stagecraft. It's learning to not wave your hands around too much or fidget. It's about vocal variety. And that part for me was really key. I could run the business. I'd been running my business for quite some time. But for me, learning to speak better, learning the clever tricks and tips, and also confidence, learning to be more confident to go on stage, that was a real bonus for me. So I hung around the PSA for a few years. In 2018, I became regional president of the Thames Valley Group. Now, we've got 13 regions around the UK and Ireland, and each one has a regional president and a team who run the events. And I madly volunteered to become regional president RP for Thames Valley. And I actually did it for 2 years. Most of our RPs manage it for a year, and for some crazy reason, I decided to do two. And that was great fun. I got to meet a lot of very good speakers. People would always get in touch and say, "Can I come and speak at your events?" I'd be booking speakers and kind of mentoring people as well, and nurturing and encouraging them and building the team. And then after 2 years of doing that, I was offered the voluntary role of marketing director for the PSA. So I've been on the board since then, and that was a lot of fun. We launched a new website a year and a bit ago, 2 years ago, which took 18 months of blood, sweat and tears to get a new website. But we're moving the PSA along, and that's been really good fun. And promoting, we run a lot of national events as well, so promoting all of those. And because I'm on the board, I was then approached a couple of years ago by, I think it was the chair at the time, who said, "Would you like to be national president?" And I went, okay. And here I am. So I took over as national president in October 2023, and I get to do it for a year. And it means that it's rather a fun job, but it's also very hectic. And my own business is kind of taking a bit of a backseat at the moment. I've been going around the regions, speaking at all the different regions. We're organising two national events. We have a one-day spring conference called Impact in April every year. And then we have a three-day conference called Summit, Speaking Business Summit, which is in October every year. And there's an awful lot of organising and planning that goes on behind the scenes, but it's great fun. And I get to meet some amazing people. And yeah, that's where I am.
Fantastic. Now, there's quite a few people listen to this podcast who are based in the States. And over in the States, the equivalent, of course, is the NSA, the National Speaking Association over there. But I imagine that, they're run on very similar lines with very similar outcomes and achievements to try and, goals.
So, absolutely. And just quickly, there are actually an awful lot of speaking associations all around the world. There's something called the Global Speakers Federation, which is an umbrella organization that looks after 17 national organizations, including America, UK, Australia, New Zealand, Germany, India, lots. But there are also lots of other ones, like Spain is the next one. PSA Spain is a really vibrant, growing group, and they're going to hopefully be the next ones to come under the GSF, the global umbrella. So yeah, wherever you're based in the world, there will be a speaking association probably that you can get involved with, hunt them out.
And Chantal, you mentioned workshops, you used that word a few minutes ago. So is the speaking association just for those who are looking to be on the stage and do their 20-minute keynote, or is it bigger than that?
It's much bigger than that. In the UK, the PSA used to be the Professional Speakers Association. And before I joined the board, it was changed to the Professional Speaking Association because the industry has changed. It used to be that keynote speaking, so going and delivering a 45-minute keynote and being paid thousands of pounds for doing it, that's what people were doing. That's what clients were looking for. There is still an element of that. But when we survey our members, which we do every year, we are finding that the majority of them are trainers, coaches, consultants. They run webinars and seminars and workshops and facilitated learning and any name you can think of, they do it. There are some members who say, oh, I'm not a speaker. Yeah, but you run training courses. Yes. Therefore, you are a speaker because you're in front of the room. You're delivering material to your client. I actually personally much prefer training and workshops. I will do keynotes, but I much prefer something that's interactive where I can get my sleeves rolled up and get in and work with clients. So, yeah, it's a complete mixture.
And, of course, have you noticed, I'm bound to ask you this because, since COVID, across the world, I imagine that we've all got used to having to learn how to speak and deliver stuff on, like we're recording this on Zoom now. So has there been a big uptake in people that you've noticed suddenly realizing that they've got this speaking skill, they're comfortable in front of an audience or in a physical workshop, but they've had to convert and learn how to do it online?
Absolutely. In March 2020, we had to, at very short notice in the PSA, flip all of our in-the-room events to online events because at the time we had, I think, 12 regions and each one of them ran an in-the-room event. And COVID hit, the pandemic struck, and we had to stop doing them. We had to put them all online. And as a result, we actually took on a lot of new members because they could go to events online anywhere that they couldn't go to before. I networked all over the UK, Scotland and Ireland, and actually Spain, France, America, because I could. That's how I ended up as a member of PSA Spain, even though I live in the UK. I was invited to speak at one of their online events. So in the PSA, as part of that, we then started looking at what training and development we needed to provide for our members to help them deliver online. I remember going to a brilliant online event where one of our top speakers shared some brilliant tips, and he was in his spare bedroom where it had been his office for years. He had a roller blind that he pulled down behind him and it was black. so that it was nice and neutral. Some people might use a green screen. His desk was an ironing board, and it meant that he could change the height of it. And he actually demonstrated on this talk. He's like, here I am sitting at my desk, and then a minute later, here I am standing up. Because actually, for me, I much prefer standing up when I'm presenting, whether I'm online or not. I'm sitting down now. But I also have, I then actually invested in a laptop stand, which I use in a different part of the office. I've got the lights. But watching this chap with the ironing board, I always remember that. But that was at the early stages when some people were saying, it's not permanent. COVID's only going to last for 6 months, isn't it? And people saying, oh, I've never done this before. What can I do to get started? So, yeah, we had to do a lot of support, a lot of learning ourselves. We actually ran for 2 years, we ran our conferences online using some very clever systems where people could come and could still come and do networking and speed networking online and speeches online. And yeah. And as a result, a lot of our members are delivering a lot more online around the world. There are some who say they never want to go back to an in-room situation. Personally, I'd rather be in front of a real audience in a room, but you know, it has opened the world.
Well, absolutely. And it's clearly a skill that you've got to have, whether, you know, whatever you're doing, because you're going to get clients who want you to deliver stuff online. You know, you talk about the ironing board. That's great. I haven't heard of that. One of the first, I remember in the early part of Zoom, someone told me, and I can't remember who it was, sit on a guitar stool, which I'm doing now. So you're kind of not slumped in your office chair. You're not stood up. It's a kind of halfway thing. But I always feel more energized. I deliver everything on every meeting I have online, whatever I'm delivering, guitar stool. Now, in the preamble, before we went live with the show, when we were discussing what we were going to talk about, we mentioned audience. And for those who are listening to this on a regular basis, they'll know that lots of people come on here and they share tips and ideas about audience. And it's such a big thing, isn't it? You know, because if your audience aren't with you, clearly that's going to be a struggle for you. So I know we talked about, and you said, you know, you would like to, you know, share a few tips and ideas about what you described, Chantal, as making emotional connections with your audience. So what do you mean by that?
I have been, since 2015, I've been researching and digging into ways in which businesses stand out better. And this includes speakers. And I started looking at the emotions that customers and audiences want to feel. So from a speaking point of view, this is about the emotion that your audience wants to feel when they hear you speak. And this is all very new in the world of business. So this is not about, do they want to feel happy? Do they want to feel sad? I've identified five different strategies, which I can share with you if we have time, but otherwise I can point you to my website and go and have a look there. So for speakers, it's really about identifying what strategy, what emotions the audience wants to feel. And this is way before you even get on stage. This is when somebody first says, could you come and speak? Or are you the right sort of speaker for us? Or what do you speak about? You know, you need to start finding out then, who are they? What type of people are going to be in the audience? What have they been promised? You know, are they being promised a motivational speaker? Have they been promised somebody who is going to educate them or entertain them or teach them the basics of marketing? Find out from the booker, from the client, what is it they're expecting and what is the audience expecting? Because what you don't want to do is go on stage. For example, I'm speaking at our spring conference in a couple of days after we record this. And I could go on stage and be all wildly motivational and say, come along, this is the time to change your business and you're going to be amazing and you've got to get up and talk to each other. There are going to be people in the room who are petrified of going on stage and who are quite scared of networking as well. They see me as a safe pair of hands. So my energy on stage will be very different to somebody who might be booked as a motivational speaker.
Right.
Now, it's slightly different for this one because I am the speaker booker and I'm the speaker because I'm running the event. So I actually get to go open the event. But it's all about setting the tone. But I know what our members are like. So that is really important, is find out as much as you can about the audience, about what they've been promised and what they're expecting, so that you can then make that emotional connection with them.
So when you say, you know, find out what your audience wants to feel, is mm-hmm. that is that different from what they want to learn?
Yes, very definitely. Yeah, definitely. When I'm speaking, when I'm being paid to speak, I speak about marketing strategy, and I'm booked because people want to learn about marketing and they want an easier way of doing it, but they also want it simplified. So being known as a safe pair of hands, I have a bit of a reputation for being rather straight talking. If somebody comes along and says, oh, should I be doing 16 different social media platforms? I'll just go, no, you should not. Stick to LinkedIn. Start there. But then I will also, so, and that's part of the simplifying it. So yes, they want to learn about marketing, but they want to learn how to do it simply and easily. And they want to feel, for my clients, they want to feel almost a sense of relief of, oh, I don't have to try and learn how to do an Instagram reel and be hip and young and trendy. I just have to learn how to use LinkedIn properly. So there is a difference. What they want to learn and how they want to feel are quite different.
So when I'm speaking to that audience, Chantelle, how will I know if I've made that emotional connection? Will there be signs? Will I be able to spot something?
Definitely. Yeah, it's a great question. It's about reading the audience. In the olden days, the body language experts would say if somebody is sitting there with their arms crossed, they're switched off, they're bored, they're not listening. Not necessarily true. Some of us just find it more comfortable sitting that way. And these days as well, it's even trickier because you might think that half the audience are not listening because they're doing something on their mobile phone. They might actually be taking notes. Or I asked somebody at a networking event years ago why he wasn't concentrating on my talk. Why was he on his phone? He said, I'm tweeting about what a great presentation you're giving. So the thing here is I've learned from that one. I don't pull anyone up anymore. But it's about reading the audience. It's about looking at them, making eye contact. And again, there will be people who are too shy and introverted to make eye contact with you. So it's about looking at all the signs that are going on in the room. How many people have got up and walked out? How many people have dozed off at the back? If you're on the after lunch session, there'll be more of them. How many of them are looking at their phones? How many of them are gazing out of the window? So it's about picking up the energy of the whole room, not individuals. That's the key part there.
And I suppose the follow on to that then, when you're talking about that emotional connection, you've just described lots of things that you can, you know, visually see and react to. But what happens when you're doing it like we're interacting now? You know, here I am. We're on Zoom. So mm-hmm. how do you do? Is there a way of getting an emotional connection feel when you're delivering on Zoom? Because you might not see anybody at all.
It's an interesting one because a lot of people will keep their cameras switched off, particularly the ones who don't want to be there or the ones who are in their kitchen and they're cooking dinner.
Yeah.
If I'm running it depends on the size of the audience. If I've got a small group, I will ask them to keep their cameras switched on so I can see them because I'm sitting here in my office. I'm looking at the camera that's at the top of my monitor, which means that when I'm presenting, sometimes I have to drop my gaze and look at the screen and look at what's going on or look at my notes. And then I go back to the camera, but it means I can't always keep an eye on what's going on, but there are ways of doing it. You can have people on gallery view. You can, I think on online presentations and training, it's even more important to get interactive. So I was at an event recently and the presenter spoke at us for about 40 minutes. There were no questions. There was no interaction. Whereas I'll be saying, okay, pop something in the chat. Let me know you're still alive, or let me know where you're from, or what's the answer to this question, or who's got a question?
You actually have
to work harder online to get that interaction to make sure that there is a connection going on there.
Well, my understanding, you know, I always joke that I had a Zoom paid account for years and used it twice, you know, and then COVID came along, you know, and things changed. But I reckon, yeah. You know, my view of it, Chantal, is that, you know, for the first 18 months, even 2 years, you know, into this, doing a lot of things online, you could get away with being pretty poor, frankly, and not very well organized. And, oh, where did this button go? And, oh, where's the screen gone and all that? And people let you go. But I think now, if you deliver something online, the expectation is you've got to be pretty good, pretty good.
Definitely, definitely. It's a competitive industry, and I'm still seeing people 4 years on from when we first started doing this kind of going, how do I share my screen? And how do I go to the right side? And there are some people who go, oh, yeah, that's fine. Personally, if I'm presenting online, I'm a perfectionist. I'm a recovering perfectionist, but I still want to be slick and organized and start on time and finish on time, because that's part of my safe pair of hands strategy, if you like. My clients are paying me to turn up on time and deliver a seamless presentation with lots of interaction and to finish on time. Even if they're disorganized and I end up not having as long to present, I will still finish exactly when they want me to, because that's what they've asked for. And that's that level of perfectionism, no, level of professionalism is what stands some speakers way apart from others. One of my clients is a brilliant coach and trainer, and he's just inundated with work because he is so organized. He's taught himself how to do everything. He has all the clever gadgets and widgets and all sorts, because he's like that. He loves the techie stuff. He does a lot of work for an associate company, and they've asked him to train the other associates in how to present online because he's so good at it.
Wow.
So yeah, I think these days, if you want to get paid decent amounts of money and you want decent bookings, you've got to learn how to do it properly. And not do the, oh, it's okay, isn't it? It doesn't matter if the dog walks across the camera. Oh, it so does. It so does.
And on that same theme, how important is it to kind of have a quite a niche subject area that you do deliver, whether that's a workshop or a keynote? Is it important? Because, you know, sometimes people's, well, I can do this. Oh, yeah, I could do that as well, you know.
Yeah, it's vital. It's absolutely vital. You know my other half, William Buse, don't you?
He came on this podcast almost a year, well, just over a year ago. Yeah, there we go.
There we go. So William speaks about mastery, or mastery, as he says it. And he's written a book called Intentional Mastery. And it's about I can't remember the exact wording, even though I helped write the cover of the book. But it's about moving from practitioner up to expert to master. And William helped me work on this a few years ago, because I used to speak about marketing. It was a huge area. So we then narrowed it down to strategic elements of marketing. And in my world, there are four. And then one day he said to me, actually, what you really need to focus on is this one little bit of one of those four. And that's what I've been doing. So since 2015, I've been researching what I now call standout strategies. Nobody else in the world speaks about standout strategies, and I've kind of invented them, which makes me, I think that makes me the master. I don't know, definitely the expert on them. But it's really important for me, because as a speaker, as a marketing speaker, I need to stand out. I was talking recently to somebody who books speakers for peer groups, for CEO groups, and he said, the problem is we've got somebody in the group who knows everything about marketing. So I said, oh, what do they know about standout strategies and building emotional connections? And he came back going, yeah, right, okay, let's talk. So from that point of view, yeah, absolutely. You've got to have something that makes you stand out and be different. I'm the specialist, the master.
Now, Chantal, I always ask guests to wrap up the podcast with a couple of top tips. But before we do that, how can people find out about you and your standout strategies, and where should they go to get that information?
Two places. You can go to my website, which is appletreeuk.com, and there's a whole load of information on there. There's a page called Take the Test, which is an interactive test that you can take to figure out which is the standout strategy that will make your business stand out. And I get the results, stick them through a bit of software that I've worked on, and you get a nice personalized report at the end of it. So that's at appletreeuk.com. And I'm also on LinkedIn. If you look up Chantal Cornelius and you look up Chantal Cornelius in the UK, the last time I checked, I was the only one in the UK with that name, with the correct spelling. There are a few more around the world. But yeah, so you can find me at my website or on
okay,
or on
well, I'll put
and
links.
Do connect with me. Come and say hello.
Yeah, I'll put links to those in the show notes. Now, what about people who are interested in joining the or getting to know more about the Professional Speaking Association? Mm-hmm. Where do they go?
They go to thepsa.co.uk.
Okay.
To our beautiful website. There's a whole load of information on there. We have different levels of membership, so the information is come and try us out. Book onto one of the regional events. If it's your first time at a regional event, you get to come for half price, so you can test us out and come and meet some nice people and see how you get on.
Fantastic. Now, have you got a couple of top tips that listeners can implement next time they're stood in front of an audience?
Oh, yes, definitely. Okay, first of all, before you stand in front of the audience, do a load of research. Really get to understand who your audience is and what they are expecting. I've seen too many people stand up in front of an audience and ask a question and they don't get the answer they were expecting, or they get no answer at all, and it really throws them. So make sure that you know exactly who your audience is and what they're expecting from you. What else? Rehearse. Don't just rehearse the speech, which I need to do for the one that's coming up, but I'm going to be getting to the venue really early on Saturday, so that I can rehearse my entrance. My theme for the PSA this year is Stand Out. We pick a theme for each year and it's Stand Out. And I've picked a piece of music for me to walk onto. So I need to know my route from the back of the room, from near the AV desk, through the room and onto the stage, so that I don't fluff it. And it would be, the equivalent would be me turning on a Zoom meeting going, oh, where are my slides and what am I doing? I want to make an impact. The event is called Impact. I need to make an impact. So I need to rehearse that very definitely. I need to know where the center of the stage is and where I'm going and which bit of the stage to stand and walk. So
that's a top point. Because I imagine lots of people, when they're presenting, speaking or whatever, they never consider thinking about where they might be emerging from.
Exactly. Yeah. Final tip, and this is actually when you come off stage. When somebody comes up to you and says, oh, I must give you some feedback, the best right. thing to do is say, thank you, would you like to email it to me? Because what you don't want, the point you've come off stage, you're hopefully feeling fabulous. You've just delivered an amazing workshop or keynote. You feel great. It's not going to be for everybody in the audience. And that person who wants to give you feedback will probably say, well, it wasn't for me, but you really don't need to hear that at that point. So I will politely say, not right now. I really need to go and my favourite ones, I need to go and check out my microphone with the AV crew at the back of the room.
Good one.
Or I need to go and get some coffee. The coffee one doesn't work as well because they say, oh, let me come with you. Whereas if you're like, no, I have to go to the AV crew, that works. And then I'll say, just drop me an email about it, which I will then probably ignore because I just, you know, it's fine. You can't please everybody all the time and you shouldn't try. There will always be people. So yeah, when they offer you feedback, just go, thank you.
So listeners, if you're ever in the audience when Chantal's speaking, I want you to now make sure that you say, oh, would you like some feedback and see what happens next?
Yeah, know what's
going to
happen.
Well, Chantal, it's been great having you on the show. Thank you very much for that. Good luck with by the time this goes out to the world, you will have done your event. You'll have worked out your stage moment and all that sort of stuff. So I hope that goes very well. And thank you for sharing all the information about the Professional Speaking Association here in the UK. Mm-hmm. The equivalent is the National Speaking Association in the States. And as you said, there's lots of others around the world. Yeah. So I hope this has inspired listeners to think, come on, you know, I've got a great subject. I can share that. I'll get out there. I'll get on that stage or I'll deliver that workshop and make it happen.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Thank you, Trevor. It's been great fun.
So thank you very much indeed. Thank you.
Thanks, Trevor.
Well, I hope that's inspired you to think, yes, there are benefits. Now, I have to, you know, say that I did join the PSA here in the UK just before Christmas. And I've learned a lot and I've met some great people. And I think it's definitely worth you considering doing that because you will be involved with like-minded people. There are 13 regions across the UK. There's a virtual region as well. And if you, I'll put a link to that. And if you're in the States, I'll put a link to the National Speaking Association in the States so you can look at that as well. And I'm sure, as Shuntel mentioned, there are so many around the world. But, you know, don't forget those three top tips that Shuntel shared with you. They're so important. That research, knowing your audience, knowing what they're expecting, you know, because there's no point in you thinking, oh, I'll fire up the PowerPoint, I'll change the logo on the front page or whatever, and then you deliver something that the audience aren't expecting or don't want. And rehearse. Everybody mentions it when they come on the podcast. But as Shuntel said, rehearse also, especially if you're a keynote speaker, your walk-on, if you like. So where are you going to come on from? How are you going to get the timing right? Because that in itself can help you engage your audience. And, I love the bit about the feedback that she suggested as well. So I've not heard that one before. So, maybe try that, you know, see what happens. Because she's right, you know, you're coming off and you're thinking you're great and you've done a really good job. And sometimes, you know, you want to get that feedback, but you want to hear some good feedback at that moment, don't you? Okay. Mind you, I think good feedback can go in the other direction as well sometimes. I would have mentioned this. I think I did a whole episode about this some time ago called Don't Tell Me My Presentation Was Brilliant. Okay. Because if you're told it's brilliant, oh, that was brilliant, it makes you think you can't get any better. So I don't want, you know, I'd like people can, you know, I'm very happy when people say that was a great presentation. But if they say it was brilliant, I'm always a bit wary. And don't, if you're the compere of an event and it's part of your organisation or your in-house do, don't also, you know, fall into the trap of saying, oh, that was brilliant. Everything's brilliant. Because some business leaders do, don't they? They, you know, they think brilliant is the word that will change the world and motivate their staff. And of course, a lot of people see through it as well. There we go. A little rant about the word brilliant. Right. If you do like the show, don't forget to share it, comment it on LinkedIn, leave a review and a rating. That would be fantastic. I'll see you on the next episode.